I'm speaking today with a cause marketing catalyst, Bruce Birch. He is the designer of the first cause marketing campaign in history, which was between the Marriott Corporation and the March of Dimes in 1976, and he's worked extensively with clients such as the American Red Cross, AT&T, Xerox, Chevron, U.S. Olympic Committee, and Special Olympics. Bruce, I'm so happy to have you with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia. It's great to be here.
And I'm very excited because you work with both nonprofits and corporations to put together, as you describe, high-level engagement or impact cause marketing campaigns. And you and I have been chatting about some already. But I want to take you back and start with the first one that you did for March of Dimes and the Marriott Corporation, which was just 30-odd years ago.
Yes.
What was it like to put on that type of campaign at that time? What was the reaction? What were some of the challenges? If you could just give us a little history of that.
Well, first of all, it wasn't designed as a cause marketing campaign. It was just a good idea. I mean, I had been hired by Marriott Corporation to come to California to open up, from a PR marketing standpoint, their theme park called Marriott's Great America, which was a 200-acre theme park, and it was the largest project in the history of Marriott Corporation to date. And the Marriott people basically said, okay, the way we develop good community relations is we offer out tickets to our restaurants, rooms at our hotel, and now that we have this big amusement park, you know, go around and show a lot of people a good time by providing some free tickets to local charities. And I stepped back and I said, I don't feel there's any engagement there. I don't feel we're opening the largest amusement park in the country that was not one of the Disney parks. And I didn't feel that was going to really have the impact that I thought we should have. So I interviewed approximately 20 different nonprofit organizations in Northern California. And what I was looking for is, was there an organization that really needed something that Marriott's Great America could offer, and was there an organization that really provided Marriott's Great America something that we needed? And after several interviews, I came up with a March of Dimes, and this partnership worked on several levels. First of all, Marriott was a very well-known family hospitality company, of course. And second of all, we're working with the March of Dimes, which is a squeaky clean image, a wonderful program working on research around children and illnesses for children. So there was an alignment of their corporate images, if you will, and that was very, very critical. And next, what Marriott wanted to do was they wanted to create a record-breaking attendance for their new theme park, and they wanted to open the largest park in their largest amusement park in history and the largest project that Marriott had ever done. Now, the March of Dimes had a different orientation to their need. They wanted to increase the overall donations from their pledge walks, but they wanted to have the donations come in by a certain funding deadline. So it wasn't that Billy was, you know, collecting pledges and going buying a bicycle. It was that Billy was not bringing the money in by the deadline, and they needed to run their business that way. So we got together and we formed a marketing plan that was in 67 cities and 17 western states, sort of Colorado through California. And we developed contests to win trips to Great America. We developed a simultaneous execution of special events. We had Bugs Bunny as our spokes rabbit, if you will, and we took him on a media tour throughout different pledge walks, so he would lead a lot of the pledge walks. Well, what happened was the viral excitement of this, that you could win a trip for 100 of your best friends to the opening date of Great America, was a huge motivational contest, especially throughout high school. The end result of this in 1976, Great America opened with 2.2 million people, which was the largest opening of a regional theme park in history. We received hundreds of thousands of dollars in free publicity in 1976. But the really big success came from March of Dimes. They raised $2.5 million in donations, which was a 40% increase in donations. And most importantly to them, besides getting more money, was that donations came in from the deadline. According to their executive director at the time, this was the most successful fundraising relationship in the history of Chapters West. So this was not meant to be a cause marketing program. This was just me at 24 years old looking at that and saying, how can I use the property that I have and find someone that has a need and put together something that would have an impact on the greater good, which were the people and the children that would be affected beneficially by the March of Dimes program. This has been credited as the first cause marketing program. I don't really agree with that, Olivia, honestly, because I'm sure there are a lot of...
I was wondering if you were going to disagree.
No, yeah, I'm going to disagree with that, because I would never take credit for something. It's been, you know, Huffington Post did an article about it being the first cause marketing program. I don't need that. I honestly don't believe it, because I really feel that there were other people putting together promotions, what you might call public-private promotions or cross-sector promotions. But I will say one thing. It was a long time before the 1983 program with the Statue of Liberty, which has been credited with being the first cause marketing program. There were many cause marketing programs before that program.
What gave you the idea to seek out a nonprofit as a partner for? I mean, have you seen other companies do this successfully? I know that you are looking for something... for an organization and resources that you could help and it could help you. But why nonprofits? I mean, particularly back then, we really thought of them as so separate from business.
Well, one reason I went to the nonprofit is because we had so much to offer, because I had the whole Marriott Corporation behind me. So I had a lot to bring to the table. In many cause marketing programs, I strongly encourage multiple partners. Obviously, the media is always an important partner, but sometimes you might have two or three corporations or two or three nonprofits working together, and you do that because you're trying to build up your value and your and what you bring to the table. Having the largest project in the history of Marriott Corporation, I had all I really needed from the for-profit side, and I knew that to get the public's engagement, rather than just coming in with lots of advertising and lots of PR about, oh, what a great amusement park we're building, which it was, I knew that to engage the public, it would be best if I picked, and we as Marriott, picked an organization that had a great reputation, that was touching a lot of people and doing some real good to our community and to our society. And I just knew instinctively that working with a nonprofit would highly leverage the entire impact of what we both could bring to each other. It just made sense.
So, Bruce, I want to get into some of the tactics now. We've started off with that, and it seems that you have this ability to intuit it. And one of the things that I read about you is that you have a strength in matching the right partners for different campaigns and designing these initiatives. So, starting out with the partners, how do you counsel, and let's take it from a business perspective, but how do you talk to businesses about what type of nonprofits they should find as partners for an initiative that they want to do?
Well,
whether or not, actually, go on.
No, it's a very, very good question, because there are so many people to potentially partner with at the first kind of stroke of things. But the very first thing I would tell either side, but speaking to the corporation or the business side, and again, it could be a small business, it doesn't have to be a Fortune 500 or large company, is to really look at what you want to do. What is the mission of your organization? What in the case, for instance, with Marriott, it was trying to introduce a very large project to get 2 million people there. So to address your own internal marketing objectives is the very first priority. And then to look at what you bring to the table. Do you have a staff that can work on it? Do you have money you can put behind it? What's your timeline? So it's identifying the factors that make up your marketing strategy first. Then you go out and you look for a partner. And what I usually recommend is that they get online and start searching for organizations that would be what I would like to refer to as sort of apples to apples. If you're a small local company that wants to do cause marketing, don't call up, you know, the national office of the Red Cross or you know, just make sure you're looking at sort of like organizations. So find something geographically. So I would search for organizations that were around, let me give you, for instance, if you were in the construction business and you wanted to develop a cause marketing program, and if you were to Google or to search for construction nonprofit in whatever your geographical region for, you would probably come up with organizations like Habitat for Humanity or other organizations that have to do with building something. So find that likeness, but also make sure that they're of a similar size and a similar scope, so you're not shooting too big. And then what I say to the nonprofits is the same thing, is to identify exactly what you want to find. What is it that you need to find? Do you need more money? Do you need services? Do you need computers donated? And then search to find organizations within your realm that are of likes. So that's really the first step. And I like to get that down to maybe 2 to 3 organizations that I think the for-profit should work with based on research. And then I go after, I look at their annual reports. I look at their anything that's online. If you use an organization like GuideStar.org, it'll tell you all about that nonprofit. It'll put up their tax information, their how they're rated by different on their use of their money and their effectiveness, and really look at the reputation of that organization. So do as much homework as possible before you ever attempt to set up that first meeting.
And then how much do you counsel, or do when you're working with companies that the nonprofit partner aligns with a social mission, or that there's a couple of ways that we can align things. So in your view and in your experience, how important is it that a nonprofit is aligned on an issue or a cause, in addition to geography, size, reputation?
I think it's critically important, because it all boils down to the very simple thing, does this partnership make sense? In other words, if you are going to look for an organization like we did with the March of Dimes, you were looking for an organization that had a mission that was family-oriented, because Marriott was building a family amusement park. So the geographics and the reputation is important. But the most important thing is that there's a brand fit, that there's an alignment between what your organization is doing and what that nonprofit wants to do. It's very important that the brand and the messaging reflect favorably on all partners. One of the worst things to happen, and I've seen several cases of this, is where a nonprofit and a for-profit will come together, and the public looks at that and says, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why would Kentucky Fried Chicken do a partnership with cities to fill potholes with tar and then put their logo on top of them? You know, I mean, at the first blush of that, it seemed to be a good idea, probably from the corporate standpoint, where they said, let's go help cities that need to have their streets cleaned up and potholes filled. But if you step back and look at it, you're filling potholes with black, oily, you know, greasy tar. And Kentucky Fried Chicken is a food operation that uses deep-fried oil to make their product. And so you're sort of equating tasty food with tar and being run over by millions of cars. So I can see where initially they thought it made sense. But in the execution of it, the public's looking at that, and they're saying, I don't get it. I mean, why would you be equating a food product with tar filling holes and being run over by cars? And so that, to me, is a perfect example of poorly designed brand fit. A great example. And a great one would be where Campbell's Soup, who had the iconic, still has the iconic red and white label on all of their cans for 140 years, teamed up with Susan G. Komen in Kroger food stores across the central part of the United States. And they changed the logo of the red and white can to be pink and white with the Susan G. Komen pink ribbon. And 3.5 cents of every can that was sold of Campbell's Soup went to the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. Now, not only did they get one of these iconic brands to change their branding for the time being, which I thought was very clever, because you walk into a grocery store and there's this whole wall of pink and white cans where you've been used to your whole life seeing red and white cans, but the vast majority of people that get breast cancer obviously are women, although men do get breast cancer. and the vast majority that buy Campbell's soup are women. So they were aligned with a women's health issue to a product that is bought primarily by women. So that brand fit, that alignment, is absolutely critical that it works and that the public understands the alignment between those two organizations.
So, and then once you have a nonprofit identified according to the alignment of values and brand and some other criteria that we've covered, how do you go about winning over that nonprofit or approaching them and then designing or setting up a campaign together?
Well, if you've done your homework right, if the business, corporation, any size of for-profit, has really selected a couple of nonprofits and they've put together their list of what they want to get out of it, then you set up a meeting, and you set up a meeting as high a level as possible. And this really gets into a whole other subject about corporate culture buy-in. The most effective cause marketing campaigns are embedded in the culture of both the nonprofit and the for-profit, which means they have to be led by the CEO or the executive director, the leadership level of the organizations. If not, they won't be believable and they won't trickle down to affect the entire organization. So you try to get at the highest level in meetings. So in the for-profit, you're usually starting in your, let's say, your chief marketing officer, your marketing department, that'll move up to your CEO eventually. And in the nonprofit side, you're going over and you're usually meeting with the executive director of the nonprofit, or if it's a very large nonprofit, then you probably would be meeting with their director of marketing or their director of fund development. But when you go into that meeting, you should go in with a very clear agenda. I was actually in a meeting a couple days ago with a nonprofit, and I was so impressed because they kind of gave me my approach right back at me. The very first thing that this wonderful lady said to me, Peggy, she said, "This is what we want to get out of the meeting. I would like to have you do," and she had a list of A, B, C, D. And I looked at her and I just smiled because I had my list. And I was going to tell her, "This is what I want from you." Because one of the biggest problems is the lack of transparency. You go into these meetings, it's like any relationship, it's built on trust. The best thing to build trust is to be totally transparent and totally honest about what you want. There's nothing intrinsically wrong with a for-profit saying to a nonprofit, "I want to increase my market share," or "I want to sell more cans of my soup, but I'm going to bring A, B, C, D to this cause marketing relationship, and it's going to create money for you to the nonprofit. It's going to create brand awareness. It's going to bring new services." In other words, you have a list of not only what you want, but you have a list of how you think they're going to benefit from them. So it's really thinking about how both sides will benefit. And if you leave that first meeting, and there'll be a lot that's not known, of course, mostly the operational things. But if you leave that first meeting without an absolutely razor-sharp understanding of what both sides want to get out of that, this will come back to haunt you. Any hidden agenda will come back to destroy any relationship, but especially a cross-sector cause marketing relationship. There's so much distrust in the world of nonprofits thinking they're going to take advantage, being taken advantage by the brand of the for-profit, and back and forth. So putting everything on the table and being very open and transparent, that's where the trust starts, and that's what makes a good cause marketing relationship at the beginning of it.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that part, that a company can go in and have the expectation or the objective to increase sales and et cetera. I mean, there are companies, they are working with financial requirements, and we sometimes think, it's not all a subjective, this is going to just improve brand image, and that's great, and as you mentioned, you give several examples of publicity that can be generated from these campaigns, but I like that you said to put that up front if that is, in fact, something that you're looking to get out of a cause marketing partnership. So I think that that's an important part.
Well, it's critical that you have this honesty. And, it may not just be money. I mean, there might be the need for computers. Let's say you're a school and you want to go to a computer company and you want to build a computer lab. or you need the expertise. There's a lot within the for-profit world that could very, very much help the nonprofit world beyond just helping to raise money for them. So a lot of good cause marketing programs are not just about how to get more money from the for-profit to the nonprofit, but are there ideas that could be developed? Are there services that could be provided? Are there transportation opportunities? There's a myriad of things that can be benefited out of these relationships. So it's important that we don't just look at the fact that when you walk in and say, I want to make money by selling more of my soup cans, and the nonprofit says, oh, great, I'd like to get the money that you want to make from your donation to me. You can say, what other things would this create? What other opportunities, what other ideas, what other services could I get, can we get, more importantly, from this relationship?
Yeah, I was talking to someone else who's involved in cause marketing, and he shared a great example of Chili's, the restaurant chain. And what
yes.
they did is they opened up their restaurants for the pancake breakfast, and so they were offering something that wasn't money, and I can't even think which nonprofit they were partnering with now, but they were for fundraisers. Anyway, and it was about realizing what other assets and resources you have that you can bring to the table that aren't only dollars.
And there are so many aspects. I mean, the way I approach this, after 30 years of doing this, I've developed an actual approach that I call the SMARTER approach to cause marketing. And what SMARTER is, it's an acronym for strategy, marketing plan, alignment, relationship, transparency, evaluation, and when you're all done, you should rejoice, and then you should revise and repeat it. A lot of times we don't party enough when we're done with having worked so hard, and we should also revise it and then go back, because most of from my experience, the really strong cause marketing relationships did not happen the first year. In many cases, a good example of this would be the relationship between City Year and Timberland. City Year is a program where youth in the inner city students between their senior year of high school and their freshman year of college take a year out and they go into the inner cities and they do tutoring programs. The first year, City Year went to Timberland and said, we'd like to get 50 pairs of boots for our people working in the city. And Timberland said, sure. So there was this kind of donation, in-kind donation. It worked so well that they came back the next year and they said, you know, we'd really like to develop a line of clothing, a uniform, so that our city year young men and women can be identified uniformly, pun intended, within their working in the inner city. And so they worked together and Timberland developed a whole line or a uniform for City Year. Well, that works so well. Now, as you can see, they're getting engaged. They're starting to listen to each other's needs. And that has grown into a major partnership where the president of Timberland actually became the chairman of the board of City Year. So as these partnerships grow, as they are revised and as they are repeated, you start embedding your philosophies and even your personnel and your services into each side of the partnerships. And this is where cause marketing goes into a whole different level. So it's just not cause marketing. It becomes sort of a social ecosystem. Where
I was just about to say that. It's way beyond cause marketing at that point.
It is way beyond cause marketing. It has to start with the transparency and the relationship and the alignment, of course, in your marketing plan. But it's really about having not just a win-win, but everybody wins. And this is the focus of my business right now. I'm writing a book right now called Glowing Your Business. And it's about the factor that when you embed cause in your for-profit organization, and it's from the CEO to the mailroom, and everyone's embedded in this, and there's a lot of companies like Patagonia, REI, Clif Bar, that have been exceptional examples at doing what I call glowing, because they create an aura about their company. Because what they've done is they're not just helping from a marketing standpoint, but their employees are engaged, their donors are engaged, their vendors are engaged, the customers that buy products from them, the media are engaged, their whole, in other words, all stakeholders around your organization, for-profit and non-profit, are engaged in this cause. And the end result of that is you have a far greater impact on society. You glow, and I like to use the analogy of fireflies, is that you bring one firefly out, and it's a bright little spot in the sky. You bring 1,000 fireflies out. It's almost like looking at the sun. So the more energy that you can surround your company with through its involvement in cause, the more light it's going to give off, and that's why I like to refer to it as the glowing of your business.
It's so interesting. I'm not even sure which direction to take this now, because I've got a bunch of questions that we could go into. And I was definitely, I'm coming back to engagement. I'm going to circle back, and we can get drill down in that a little bit more.
Sure.
But could you walk us through some of the elements of the smarter approach, which you had mentioned, is your approach to creating these types of campaigns?
Absolutely. Well, let's just start with strategy. The most important part to begin with is to figure out what you really want to do. So the S is for strategy. So when we wanted to do the how can we get as many people possible prepared and in emergency preparedness in the San Francisco Bay Area, we knew, as I said earlier, that everyone knew about emergency preparedness, but they weren't doing anything about it. So our strategy was, and we actually wrote this as our strategy, what do we have to do to get your attention? So we created a whole series of in-your-face guerrilla marketing ideas that went right out into the public and said, look at this. You know, we cracked a major square in half, and not literally, but with a decal. We had billboards all across the Bay Area that took the major bank buildings and bridges, like the Golden Gate Bridge, and we had them shaking. We did all of these things to engage people. But the key to this was that everything we came up with, every idea from our team, which was our pro bono advertising agency and our in-house team at the Red Cross and other volunteers that helped us, it was all bounced against the strategy of what do we have to do to get your attention. So what's key about strategy is that if a good idea comes in the door and someone says, oh, I think we should do this, put it up against the strategy. If it doesn't fit, you need to discard it or more importantly, maybe just bucket it and save it for another thing. The next one, of course, is your marketing plan. And I won't drill too far into this because we'll be here for 4 hours. But the marketing plan is where you've taken your strategy and now you've looked at all the different aspects of publicity and media relations and donor relations and advertising, if you can get someone to pay for it for free, and special events and everything that you would do as part of an integrated marketing plan, and you develop a plan that takes the best advantage of all the different aspects of what you're trying to do in this campaign, and you develop a marketing plan that really makes a lot of sense. Then you move on to the alignment, which we talked a lot about, is having proper alignment. And then the R is for relationship. So in your relationship, you're trying to build that trust. You're trying to build that understanding that there's going to be some bumps along the road. There's going to be a bad press. Someone's going to it happened with our billboards. We made these billboards that looked like one of the major buildings in San Francisco, the Ferry Building, had been destroyed through an earthquake. Well, it scared people a little bit. It actually scared the people in Washington that were the Red Cross. They said, it was too intense. But we had built up such a strong relationship with our partners and with everyone that we kind of weathered that storm. And in the end, it turned out to be a program that everybody was excited about. So building that trust and building that relationship, even when you have some bumps in the road, is going to be critical. We talked about transparency. The transparency is making sure that everyone knows what everyone else is doing. And then the evaluation, which is the E, and the evaluation is to look at what you've done, what you're doing. I always think one of the greatest words in cause marketing is the word stop. It's what I call the four-letter word of cause marketing, stop. Look at what you're doing. Is it on strategy? Is it matching the goals of both sides of the partnerships? And if it's not, then to change it. And so constantly you should be evaluating. I always recommend that you do a survey at the beginning of any cause marketing to find out what the public is thinking about your organization. I think all organizations should do this all the time, which is to see how your brand is being looked at, because your brand is basically your reputation in a community. And look at where are people in this equation? For instance, we surveyed that only 6% of the Greater Bay Area in San Francisco was prepared for any kind of an earthquake. So we knew what our baseline was. And this doesn't have to be a very large, fancy, expensive external survey. You can use SurveyMonkey or a myriad of free online survey organizations to do this. But you need to understand where you are and where you want to go and all along evaluate that. And, of course, when you get to the end of this, the R in that is the rejoice part. You need to celebrate your examples and what you've done. What you'll find at the end of a campaign is, first of all, it worked, it was fabulous, and everyone's excited, and you want to do it again. Or you also find that, you know, it didn't quite meet what we were trying to do. And so we're going to shake hands, and we're going to say it was great and move on. Or you're going to look at this and say, this is just the beginning. We're going to really revise this and repeat it and make it much stronger next year. So I'm running through that, Olivia, fairly quickly, but that acronym of SMARTER is a implementation plan and process that I find is absolutely critical to do all of those steps and not leave any of them out, because the whole campaign needs to be integrated. And the bottom line of the whole thing is that when you do that, your partnership is happy, your results have been brought in, and your community is affected.
And Bruce, is there typically one element of that people leave out or that they just kind of skim over? Have you seen patterns of that? People are less willing to take the time to evaluate or to develop the relationships, or et cetera?
I think maybe two. The first one to me is strategy, is that a lot of partners will get together and they'll say, okay, I want to raise money. That's the nonprofit. The for-profit is I want to sell more of my product or services. And they just don't think of a strategic positioning that would really work. And the bottom line right now is that the media is so inundated. They're having a hard time with advertising right now. They're having a hard time keeping a lot of media outlets open. And so you need to do something that sets your campaign apart. To me, this is very important. So when we did what do we have to do to get your attention, part of that strategy was to really do something that we knew that the media would respond to. As I said, we got $3 million of donated media on that campaign. Because when we cracked Union Square in half, or we put debris all over cabs and ran them around towns, the media was kind of going, wow, look at what they're doing. Wow, maybe we better get prepared. So I think the strategy is absolutely critical, and that you bounce everything against the strategy. And the other one, of course, evaluation and the revise is important, but I think the transparency. I think the public in the world right now is very, very attuned when someone's not telling the truth or that you don't know where the benefit is going. So I think transparency is absolutely critical.
So let's talk a little bit about that. And you and I were talking about the example of the Product Red campaign, which wasn't very transparent and confused and disgruntled people because of that. But if you say, think, okay, so transparency, I know what that means. It means if I talk about what this partnership means on the product or on the literature for the campaign, then I'm being transparent. But let's get a little more into some of the pitfalls, some of the ways that perhaps we think we could be think we're being transparent, but we're not quite there.
Well, one of the things I like about what the Red Cross does is that when they are doing a cause marketing campaign, they are very specific on what they mean by transparency. So they will say, and it's the agreement that you sign to work with them, is that this program will raise this amount of money by this date in this manner. So let's use the example of a T-shirt. If they're selling a T-shirt in a store and it has a little hang tag that says, you know, 25 for, you know, a lot of them will just say a donation from your purchase of this T-shirt will go to support some cause. Red Cross, that's not how they work. That hang tag will say that $1 of this T-shirt purchase will go towards a commitment that this store has made of, let's say, $250,000 in a campaign that will be concluded by September 10th, 2011. They're extremely transparent in how they want the public to know what gets out there. One of the things that's happening right now, Olivia, that is just unconscionable is what's being called causeless cause marketing. And I've seen a couple examples, and I won't mention the names, but this is where an ad will be taken out in paper, and it will say, our company is going to support such and such, let's say it's going to be AIDS in Africa, that we're going to help with the prevention of AIDS in Africa. Now, in no part of that ad does it say the organization they're working with. In no part in that ad does it say how much money they're giving, when they're going to give it, or even how they're going to give it. So from a public standpoint, that could be a straight advertisement that has absolutely no beneficiary whatsoever. And we're seeing a growth in that, which is very scary to me. But I also believe greatly in the world public. They're going to look at that and say, this is just not believable and not support it. But it's sort of a sad statement of people trying to use causes without even helping them.
It really is, and I've seen more of that myself. And in terms of the product Red, they've been around for several years, and they've had this criticism regarding their transparency, and yet I still, I have to say, I just recently got an iPod, and I bought a Red iPod, and in my package was a little card that said, a portion of this purchase will go to helping AIDS in Africa. And I thought, for really? You're not even going to give me any more than this? What type of portion? And I just, it really stunned me, given how much attention this campaign has got for some of that type of mistake that it's made in the past. And really, the position that it has to be an example of how to do things well for other companies to follow.
Well, what's really sad about that is that when that campaign first came out, there was a lot of criticism in their lack of transparency, and it looked like they had taken that to heart and said, okay, I mean, listen, you can make a mistake, and we all make mistakes. And they could have said, oh, I'm sorry. In their next campaign with iPod or Gap or Armani or whoever they were doing it with, they could have said, of this iPod purchase, $1 goes to, and name a specific organization and a specific commitment of that amount of money. That's where I think that the public did just what you would do and say, what are you really giving? Is it 1 cent or is it $10? Mm-hmm. And if it's 1 cent, then it's totally bogus. And if it's $10, oh, that's a good donation. So you can see how the public's going to react positively in one direction and very negatively in the other. And transparency is easy to do because those organizations know how much money that they are setting aside for their donation or how many sales have to be made to reach their target. These are marketing programs. Marketing people within those organizations did not do that without having some concept of how much money is going to have to go out to the charity.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, it really gives the consumer, I have a much different feeling knowing that, and it's a feeling I'm not nearly as proud of my purchase, and I don't feel that I would stand by it or identify myself with it in the same way than if they said they're giving some amount that seems significant. But I want to use that as a segment into personally and emotionally engaging participants in these types of campaigns, and one group of participants is, of course, the consumer, and this is really a trademark of your work. So in the example of what you did with the American Red Cross and disaster prevention disaster preparedness in San Francisco, your idea of engagement was to get attention and part of that was to shock people, kind of displace their sensibilities. What else have you noticed about engagement from the work that you've done? What can you share with us about how we could do it?
Well, one of my favorite, relatively easy to do nonprofit for-profit partnerships is with the St. Baldrick's organization, where on every St. Patty's Day they have programs where they shave people's heads, and the money that you pay to have your head shaved goes to children's cancer research, and I believe they're the largest organization of donating to children's cancer research. there's nothing more engaging than sitting in a salon or barbershop chair and having clippers coming towards your hair that's going to take all your hair and drop it on the floor. I mean, that's about the most engaging nonprofit I've ever seen. Or Habitat for Humanity. One of the programs out in the West Coast that I really like staying on top of is the AAA, the Automobile California State Automobile Association, did a survey last year. And they found that the number one reason why people want to work for AAA is the company's commitment to its community. They give 1 week a year to their employees to go join and work for any nonprofit. And so what the employees are doing is saying, well, not only is that wonderful, but I'm going to get my friends or my associates or my colleagues within AAA, and we're going to all go out together as a team. They work very closely with is Habitat for Humanity. So this team from AAA will go out as a team, work for Habitat, actually be crawling up on rafters and putting in roof nails, and they get such camaraderie out of that. They're laughing, they're working, they're sweating, they're engaging with it. And all the time, what are they thinking? This home is going to be a shelter and a real home for a family that can't afford to be in a home right now. So there is such morale boost from that. There's such camaraderie that comes from that. So these employees come back to AAA, and they're stoked. I mean, they're excited about, oh, they have stories to tell, and they're telling all of their colleagues in their offices and out in their jobs about the adventure that they had. And so they have a very high retention of employees. They have a very high morale rate. And, of course, just from an accountant standpoint, if you have high retention, which means you have low turnover, it means your company makes more money. So that sort of engagement, when organizations get their employees and allow their employees go out into the community and become physically engaged in the nonprofit, that's when I think you have real success.
And have you seen, in terms of engagement, for if we're talking about a program and it's customer engagement, we're asking the customer to take a certain action at the point of purchase or a follow-up action, have you seen in cases where this works and when it doesn't, or what's too much to ask the customer to do? Do you have any guidelines you could share about type of customer engagement?
Well, there was a program that was developed, and I don't have all the particulars, but it was between CARE and Starbucks. And there was a very successful program where customers would come into Starbucks, and there would be posters that would explain that CARE and Starbucks had identified different regions, coffee-growing regions, that needed to support the population through the CARE programs. And so CARE got together with Starbucks to select certain amount of these coffee-growing regions. And so CARE was saying, we would like to affect this region where coffee is being grown. And Starbucks was saying, we would like to help you affect them, so we will put in buying systems and different criteria that we will only buy naturally grown coffee from that particular area. Again, I don't know all the parameters, but they formed this partnership, and then they brought it back into the stores. So the customers of Starbucks are walking into the stores, and they're being able to buy a product that is helping to benefit the CARE program. They're learning how Starbucks is only buying coffee from those particular regions and from those small farms where the coffee is really supporting that family in that small village. They were making records and other things that they would sell to the customers that would have benefit to it. So the customers knew that through their purchase of Starbucks coffee, they were helping these small farms and these families and these villagers grow coffee, which was their only form of making money in their village. And that's one of those where everybody wins. The customer feels good. CARE receives the benefit. They're working in partnership with Starbucks to get good coffee beans that come into their stores. There are a lot of those type of examples.
And that's an example of educating your consumers versus asking them to take a specific action, right?
Well, I know you weren't
sure of all the components of the partnership, but I wonder if it was limited to buying certain types of coffee. But
Well, that was that was educating the any consumer that was buying anything, yes, about what the CARE and the Starbucks consumer or Starbucks organization was doing together in a partnership. There are some online there's an online program right now called Kickstart, which is a fascinating program where people that want to do good projects go online and they say, this project's going to cost me. One I saw the other day that I thought was fascinating was someone wanted to raise $2,300 to take recyclable products and make art out of them, and then to put this art on display, and they needed $2,300 for the whole program. So by putting it online, they were basically saying, will you, through social networking, will you fund my $2,300 project? And everyone pledges to do that, everyone that wants to participate. Now, they don't have to put any money into it until it gets to $2,300. And the minute they meet the goal of the funding pledge, then everyone is then kind of, then their credit card or however they're doing it is then docked whatever their donation was. And what I like about that is someone comes up with a good idea, it's going to cost a relatively small amount of money, and then they engage through social networking all these people around the country, around the world that want to help them. And when they raise the $2,300, the sponsor of that project, in this case it was a photographer artist, went out and actually put this program together. So that is a form of social networking engagement where there's something that physically comes out of it at the end.
Yeah, that's an interesting example. I hadn't thought about that in the same type of the same type of conversation. And one of the things that you and I were also talking about was behavioral change. And you were able to do this again with the campaign you did in San Francisco with the American Red Cross. And the behavioral change was getting people to take these courses, to buy the supplies, to have a sit down and plan these strategies in case of an earthquake or disaster. But what are some other ways with companies that you've worked with or other campaigns you've seen that has successfully changed people's behavior?
Well, there was a campaign that was developed between the large timber company Georgia-Pacific and the Nature Conservancy. Now, at first blush, you would look at that and say, this is a tree hugger group that is working with the tree cutter downer group. And so how could they possibly align their missions? And then they did. They started talking about specific sites in the United States, I believe, and it may have been around the world also, where the Nature Conservancy said, we want to save these sites from logging. And some of those sites were sites that were owned by Georgia-Pacific or other large companies that were in the timber business. And they worked together and found out, for instance, that they could build a barrier, for instance, that there was one project where they built a 300-foot barrier back from an endangered river. And they found through their scientific analysis of this that if they built a buffer, if you will, of the tree stand that went from the river's edge 300 feet into the forest, and for about a 50-mile length of that river, that no logging could be done up to that 300-foot buffer zone. So it was a real, I don't know if, I would have to say that was maybe corporate directional change rather than maybe behavioral change. But what happened was you took two antagonistic or potentially antagonistic organizations and you put their motivation of what they were trying to do. One company wants to save trees, one company wants to cut them down. You put those objectives on the table and they changed the entire way they were doing business. And it became so successful that other timber companies who at first thought this was ridiculous because they were, you know, the timber industry was very concerned that it would become rampant, that they wouldn't be able to cut some of these forests that they wanted to cut. But by working with the conservation organizations, they were able to save the most important part of those particular areas of logging and still be able to log and then replant other parts. So it became this enormous win-win. So that is behavioral change, but in a little different spin. But I've always thought that that was one of the ones that was having tremendous impact when you take two potentially antagonistic organizations and have them work together.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so fascinating, and it really does serve the purposes of both of them. That's a phenomenal example. And were you going to share another one earlier about American Express before I interrupted you about something else? Which is that example around behavioral change?
I don't think I know two or three of their campaigns. That was mostly around, I don't think that was around behavioral change. It was mostly, okay. They're doing a campaign right now where they're giving $200,000 to three different nonprofits per quarter. So basically 12 nonprofits are getting $200,000 a year. And American Express, I understand, is spending something like $30 million to tell us about that $4 million donation. What bothered me a little bit about that was that I didn't see a partnership. I commend them in giving the money to these nonprofits, absolutely. But what I think's missing in that is that I believe one of them was Big Brothers Big Sisters, which I'm very close with out here. If they formed a partnership around that money, if they really worked together on how that money could be used, one of the things that in Big Brothers Big Sisters that is really needed around behavioral change, if you will, because I used to be on their board here, is the fact that people need to understand the wonderful impact that you not only have on the little, you know, the little brother or the little sister, but on yourself by becoming a big brother, a big sister. So you change, your life changes, and their life changes by this relationship. And one of the hardest things that Big Brothers Big Sisters has to communicate is that benefit, because most people think, oh, I'm going to spend so much time with my little brother and my little sister, and they look at the negatives and not the positives. When they get involved and they realize that some of these, I've had three little brothers, some of these matches can go for a year, some of these matches can go for 20 years. That is huge behavioral change in your attitude and in your relationship with this young man or woman, and or boy or girl, and also with the men and women that are involved. Now, had the funding company, whether it's American Express or someone else, really come in and looked at how can we stimulate, not just give them money, but how could we stimulate an educational program so people understood the value to the youth and the value to the adult, that would have created better of a behavioral change to me.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, I don't know if this question is really going to make sense, but when you are working on these campaigns to come up with a tactic, are you putting yourself in the other person's shoes about what will get my attention, or are you looking at some of the other examples that companies have done about what's been successful, and what's kind of the balance? I mean, you seem to have an innate ability for this, but for those who don't or who haven't been doing it as long, of course, what are some of the primers for getting these ideas going?
I think it's first, as I said earlier, Olivia, I think it's first understanding what your organization really wants to accomplish by going outside, because it's going to cost you money, it's going to cost you time, it's going to cost services, it's going to take away from other priorities of your business or your nonprofit on that side. So it's really stepping back and saying, what do I have to gain by developing a partnership with one or more other organizations? That's the first big question. And that's pretty easy that's not some big creative genius idea. That is something that's pretty easy to assess and to put down by talking to your marketing people, your HR people, your human resources people are constantly looking for ideas to help the employees have better morale and be more engaged at work. I mean, that's their job, is to make the employees happy. So when you start talking within your organization, whether that's 5 people or 5,000 people, and say, what could make our company shine a little bit more? What could make it glow a little bit more, to use that? And the HR people say, you know, if we could really get our employees out on the streets doing something good and working together, I think that would really build their morale. So yes, the strategy is very important, but I think the most important thing is that people look at what they already need and they assess that, and then they can go out and find partners and start working on that. A quick example, several years ago, I was involved with Special Olympics here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we wanted to start a soccer program. Well, one of the wonderful things about soccer is you throw a ball out on any kind of a field, and you have a soccer program. You know, you don't need stadiums, you don't need uniforms, and most of the young men and women, the Special Olympics athletes, have got tennis shoes. So we went to Levi, and we said, would you support our Special Olympics program by buying some soccer balls? And they went, well, yeah, because that's not going to cost us very much. And there, we went to their employee people, not to their marketing people. And we got their employees from their employee fund to put up some money to buy some soccer balls for the San Francisco Special Olympics. Well, then they came out and they said, this is really fun. We're really supporting this program. And we said back to them, you know, we would love to have some of the Levi employees come be coaches. And all of a sudden, all these young men and women from Levi came out on the weekend and started coaching our soccer teams. And this grew into such a wonderful relationship that in 1980, when the U.S. Olympic games were canceled that were going to be in Moscow, and I know that intimately because I was public relations director for the United States Olympic Committee, and the games I had been working on were canceled, Fred Banks was the president of Women's Wear, and he called me up. And he said, you know, we've developed such a great relationship with Special Olympics, and our employees are so engaged, and everyone loves us. You know, I have got warehouses filled with Olympic clothing that Levi, at the time, was the Olympic clothier for the 1980 Olympic Games, could not sell because it had all the official Olympic patches and everything all over it. They could give it away, but they couldn't sell it. He said, would you like to have this? Millions of dollars of Olympic specially designed clothing. We set up 4 distribution points around the United States, and Special Olympics came in to these 4 distribution points. And the next summer, these young men and women of the Special Olympics were marching in their parades and doing their athletics in Olympic uniforms. It was phenomenal. They were the proudest human beings you've ever seen on the face of the earth when they were walking around the track, because I was here at Berkeley Stadium in Berkeley, California, University of California, when we had the state games, and out came all of these Special Olympic athletes wearing the Olympic uniform. It was amazing. That started by engaging employees in buying about 10 soccer balls.
That's phenomenal. And I'm really moved by that story, and because of the impact, and also then, you know, circling back more pragmatically, because it started with such a small action and just grew from there. And one of the things that I always notice when I talk to certain people in this field is the best people in this field, it's just fun. It's creative. It's not, there is thought and there's research, and as you say, there's homework. And there's a lot of work, but there's just so much joy and fun that goes into creating these. And that's something that it's harder to translate into these posts and to teach people about that, but I do really feel that it's important. So I'm giving it a verbal minute here. But Bruce, thanks for sharing that story. That's terrific.
Well, one thing about this, Olivia, is that cause marketing to me is not rocket science. And you don't need that, as I said earlier, that big genius idea. But growing out of that, what grew out of that soccer ball donation was a phenomenal gift and a phenomenal relationship. There was no big idea around it. But whenever you get 2 or 3 people sitting around a table saying, what could we do together, someone's going to come up with a good idea. Because you're coming from your heart. You're not coming from, this will make so much money in this quarter for something. I mean, yes, that's part of it, because that's why they want to spend marketing dollars rather than philanthropic dollars. But from innumerable times, I have been in meetings where I've sat across from someone, and I just saw this light go on, and they said, you know, we've got this, whatever this is, that we can donate to you. And I think, and then they go into some idea. I've seen it happen on almost every meeting I've ever been in in such a meeting where you've got both sides sitting across the table, where someone's going to come up with an idea that no one thought about, that no one came into the meeting thinking, oh, I've got this great advertising idea, here's a big slogan. It grows out of the heart where people say, how can I help those Special Olympians? How can I help the little brothers and little sisters? Someone's going to come up with the idea. So I am obviously such a proponent of this because everybody wins, and it doesn't have to be a huge organization. It doesn't have to be a huge amount of money. It can be very, very small, but it has to start with the sincere, and this is where transparency comes into it, the sincere belief that you want to help somebody else. If it starts from that just basic kind of good neighbor, golden rule, however you want to look at it, rule that says, I want to do this just because I would love to help that person have their life made better, magic will happen.
Bruce, that's a good closing statement, unless you have anything else to add.
Well, I just want people to know that this is the right thing to do. This is something that will make you feel good, it'll make your family, your community feel good, and it will have an impact. And right now, in these tough economic times, you know, we need a win. We individually need a win. We need a win across our whole world. And when you see someone smile because you just kicked a soccer ball at them, or, you know, you gave the organization some money for research to help children's cancer, that makes us feel good. And right now, we all need to feel good.
I really enjoyed it, Bruce. Thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to you.
For more interviews about cause capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.